We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Everyday Genius. I'm your host, Pete Craig, and today it's a pleasure to welcome someone who is a learning empowerment consultant. She's also the founder and CEO of SheBear Connection. SheBear Connection is a community interest company, and she has a dream to create a child-led, consent-based education alternative to the traditional education system. So I'm really excited to kind of have a chat and delve into kind of what this means and what her beliefs are around education as someone who studied education at university, has a degree in education studies, and has worked with children extensively. I'm interested to dive into kind of how children are impacted by the education system and how we can improve that by looking at different ways of doing this. So please join me in welcoming Sarah SheBear. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you for inviting me along.
My pleasure. So let's start, I guess, with what set you on this journey in the first place. I know you studied, you did your degree in education, but what kind of triggered that? Was there always a passion for education?
I sort of always wanted to be a teacher since I was young. I always feel that I sort of have a wisdom to impart to people of all ages. But I never had the opportunity to go to university as a teen. So I done my sort of life a little bit backwards and went into university as a mature student. Mm-hmm. I have two now adult sons myself, and one is now 25. He's got Asperger's, but he was nurtured throughout his mainstream education and really excelled. And he achieved a first-class degree with honours in computer science and artificial intelligence. Awesome. And my other son has chronic fatigue. And so at the age of 10, he couldn't really cope with school. And luckily enough, it tied into my dissertation for my degree. And I studied home education. Mm-hmm. And to see what was different, what was needed, and so on. And armed with all this research I'd done, I pulled him out and I home educated him. And because of his energy levels, it was all child led. Yes. So I've got the background of two totally diverse learning experiences from my children. Mm-hmm. And, they are both well-rounded adults. They both have the skills to go out in the world and excel.
Mm-hmm. You said that your kind of eldest son was kind of supported and nurtured through the traditional education system. What did that look like? So what form did that take?
Basically, it was quite strange because throughout his different mainstream, then at college and then at university, he had the same learning mentor, basically the lady who works out what his needs are.
Right.
So as he had her throughout, she always knew what she needed and was able to put them in place for him.
Okay.
And he actually inspired a teaching assistant to become a teacher, because when he was doing maths, he would be doing a Rubik's Cube. And the teacher would say to him, "Oh, are you listening?" And he'd be able to recite the whole sentence exactly what she'd said. And he wanted to do the lesson in binary, being a total computer geek. And this has inspired, the teaching assistant to now be a teacher, which I'm very proud of.
Beautiful, yeah. So was there... Yeah, again, I'm trying to understand. So this person that kind of came through with him through his education process, what was the extra support that he required in order to allow him to excel in such an amazing way?
Basically, he had a reader and writer provided. He doesn't read.
Right.
He's 25 now. He doesn't read. He listens. He gets his gadgets to read things out to him. You know, he'd done a dissertation and it was amazing. He has the words in his head. It's just getting them out. Mm-hmm. And it's also being with people who give him that space and that time and patience for him to get his words out, mm-hmm. You know, so he can be understood, because inside he is a very intelligent young man.
Yeah.
But it's just getting it from here out into the world.
Yeah. Well, that kind of brings me on to the next question, and yeah, my belief, and we talked about this before, and that's that, you know, and it's not just my belief, it's actually proven, you know, that kids are born, or we're all born with a level of genius, with a unique genius, and clearly that's his, computer science is his genius. It's the way his mind is wired in order to allow him to do that and to excel at that. What's your kind of experience of kind of understanding or identifying what children's genius is at an early age, and then helping them nurture that?
Well, really, that's sort of my whole ethos. We need to give these children the opportunity and the freedom to find their genius and find their passions. And it might not be academic. And it might be more physical, which obviously isn't catered for in the current mainstream. And, you know, with these children actually sort of going into school and not being able to experiment and to sort of take risks and to sort of find themselves, it's sort of not giving them the opportunity. It's crushing their genius. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if we're not too careful as parents, we can also crush their genius, because we've got it in the mindset that they're going to do well at school, they're going to get qualifications, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. Actually, they've got their own little agenda, and they had it when it was born, the child was born. And we have to honour that. And I sort of see all these sort of like hierarchical, authoritarian sort of ways of bringing children up. And actually it needs to be, we need to honour them as much as we honour ourselves. And we need to let them teach us things as well as us imparting information to them. And, you know, and us not sort of forcing the information into them, them asking for it and having a passion to receive that information.
So there's a huge role for parents to play in this as well, then, isn't it? It's very easy just to sit back and blame the education system and say the education system is wrong. There's a whole shift that needs to happen within parenting, and that needs to start. I guess this is one of the things, we do the best as parents with the information we have, the knowledge we have. But while we're still teaching at schools the same way, then those generation after generation are growing up in the same way and becoming parents in the same way that we became parents. Exactly. There has to be a line drawn in the sand where we say, right, now we're going to work with a percentage of parents and help them understand how they can educate their children, how they can support their children within the existing education system, but also then give them some additional support that helps them kind of find and tap into that genius. So then those children grow up actually having experienced a different type of parenthood. So as then eventually, in 10 years time, 20 years time, 30 years time, actually what we've got is a generation of parents that are coming through that actually understand that that there's genius already there and a different type of parenting is needed.
Exactly. I think it's time that we all actually took responsibility back.
Yeah.
The children take responsibility back for their learning. The parents take their responsibility back from the school to facilitate their children's learning. Mm-hmm. We're coming into a new era now. Well, even with the situation we've had, we've got this new era of children learning online. Mm. It's going to evolve. It's going to become different. We are going to start to honour the soul of the child and become holistic. Mm. And yes, this generation of children will learn these new parenting skills, and that will then roll out in the future. So this sitting 30 at a desk each in a classroom, people will laugh at in the future because they will see it is not the way. We also need that contact with nature.
Yeah.
We need to, we are animals underneath and we need that contact, and that will help.
That was the next question I was going to ask you, actually. It's all very well saying, and I know this is a big part of what you do, but it's all very well saying, we need to allow them to be themselves. And we've done ourselves, we've done a lot of research on this. And it's, there are some really simple ways to, to allow kids to be themselves. And one of those is, is through, some of those are through just very simple things like understanding the importance of their breath, and understanding that it's the life force within us. And if they can actually connect to it, then it's not just one of those things they just ignore and it just happens. It's actually something that allows them to regulate their behavior, allows them to regulate their moods. And so they understand from an early age then how to control themselves and how to deal with emotion and deal with stress and deal with anxiety, rather than suppressing it and pushing it down until one day it explodes, or they go so deeply inside that like many, unfortunately, more and more people these days, especially men, they end up committing suicide because the depression has pushed them down so deep. And much of that comes from childhood trauma, which comes through not understanding how to connect with themselves, their bodies, their breath, their minds. And I think what you were pointing to there is that actually a really easy way of putting them in a state of mind where that becomes much easier is by reconnecting them with nature.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And it puts you back into the survival sort of mode and the way of being, but also being in nature, you have the green. Green is a natural antidepressant. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the phytocytes, which are the chemicals coming from the trees, which are also a natural immunity booster. And it's sort of allowing those children to also take risks, sort of climbing and movement and investigating and exploring. And sort of, I used to run a forest fun session where we would go around the forest and we'd use the forest as our playground, very much on the same level as forest schools, but with moving around the woodland instead. You've hit the nail on the head. I didn't quite allude to the fact that, when we are in nature, I encourage the children just to sit or even lay and listen and feel their breath, feel the, their stomachs raising and lowering as they're breathing, as they're listening and so on, and getting them just tuned back into themselves and tuned back into nature.
When you've done that with groups of children, what's the, so I'm going to ask this on three levels. So firstly, what's the, visually, what do you see in them? Then what do they like report back to you as their experience of it? And finally, do you get feedback, and if you do, what feedback have you had from parents after one of those sessions?
Okay, well, visually, when they first come along, obviously they don't know me. If they're under eight, then their parents are a parent or carer is with them. They just seem so much more relaxed. And I make it into a story as we go into through this sort of path, we're going into a magical world. So I pull on the sort of the magic of the child's mind and imagination. And, they will sort of go off and I says, right, the rule is we've got to be able to see you and you've got to be able to see us. And we have to be kind and we have to keep each other safe. Three walls, very simple rules. And they're totally relaxed. You know, they do look to you as if to say, "Oh, am I doing something naughty?" But no, there's nothing naughty.
Yeah.
They're special needs children, and you wouldn't know their special needs because it's an environment where that doesn't matter.
Mm.
And every child has their unique gift. And it has been the fact that, you know, a child with anxiety come along and, you know, he sort of really doesn't like meeting new people. So, you know, he met me and then, you know, we chatted and so on. And in the end, he actually wanted to come along again.
Yeah.
And his mother said, to be honest, he's never wanted to come and meet and do an activity again. Mm-hmm. So you've had a profound effect on him.
Mm-hmm.
And the mothers, as they come out, they says, "Whoa, we feel like all our stress has sort of totally drained yeah. away." So it's therapeutic for the mothers and the child. Mm-hmm. And especially that we're all looking out for the children. So if a mother has a particularly, you know, demanding young person, the mother can actually relax and stand back and, yeah. you know, they might panic over them. I says, "No, don't panic. We're all here. We've all got our eyes on yeah. all the children mm-hmm. so you can relax." So the mothers yeah. recommend it as well.
Yeah. Cool. And what about the children? You know, what kind of feedback do you get from the children?
They always love it. They always want to come to the next one. And unfortunately, I had to sort of pack it up because I would hold a rucksack of activities with me, and I had a period I went through where my back gave out.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
it just goes to prove there are more simpler ways to do it. I don't need to carry all this stuff on yeah. my back.
Yeah.
We can just go, and obviously with the limitations we've yeah. had more recently, I haven't sure. started it up again.
Cool. And do you, you know, this is clearly not something that happens in, not something that happens a lot in mainstream education. But yeah, I would imagine, you know, just an element of that would make a huge difference to, you know, kind of behavior in classrooms and all sorts of other, you know, positive benefits.
Yes, definitely. They do forest school for the younger children, but the older children need it as well. I have taken a group of teenagers out from a referral unit and we did bushcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, these teenagers, some have got a criminal record and so on, but I've got the, you know, the knives and everything, only two, and I've got the sparkers and so on. And I allowed them, I gave them the freedom. I said, the rule is keep each other safe. If I see you messing with that knife and using it incorrectly, I will take it off of you.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, "What?" I says, "Yes, I do know karate and I do know how to disarm someone." And they didn't want to take me up on that challenge, thank goodness.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the case of one of them pocketed the sparkers. We would light fires and so on with the sparking tool. And they didn't want to give it back. And I says, "Right." I says, the driver of the minibus, I says, "Don't open the minibus until I've got the sparker back. I don't care who has it. I want it back in my hand." So I heard a bit of shuffling and I says, "Right, we'll be here. You're missing out. You'll miss out on your taxis going home." So eventually that sparker got in my hand. We got in, we went back.
Yeah. Do you think then that that's part of this idea or this perhaps change that needs to happen where, you know, you kind of talked a little bit right at the beginning about, you know, we're all responsible for education and we're all learners and teachers at the same time. Do you feel like you're part of the challenge is that children aren't and especially as they grow up into their teen years and they're kind of trying to find themselves and who they are and trying to find their own identity and their own voices. Do you feel that actually part of the problem is that they're not, they don't feel they're given respect. They don't feel that they're given, you know, choices. They feel like they're not in control.
Definitely. You know, they, with a lot of things, they're shoehorned down a specific path. they don't feel respected. You know, I've worked with young black boys and they, you know, they just take it on themselves that you are against them. And actually, you've got to show that as a teacher and a TA, you have to show them the respect that you want to command. Mm. A lot of sort of in the educational field, it's like, you've got to respect the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But how about the teacher respecting the child?
Mm.
How about the parent respecting the child? And if there can be mutual respect and healthy boundaries, probably natural consequences. For example, if a child doesn't want to put their coat on and it's raining, they're going to get wet.
Yeah.
Well, let them.
Yeah.
If they want to go out in the snow and they haven't got their boots on, they've got trainers on, well, let it be a natural consequence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as parents, we don't own them. We are just here to give them some guidance so they can survive into adulthood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we've got to take on board. And yes, as you say, we are always learning. If a parent thinks they're not learning or they don't need to learn anymore, well, I think they're going to be mistaken, especially yeah. with the changes that will be coming up.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's definitely been, I think it's been a tough time, you know, for a lot of parents, you know, kind of trying to juggle work, trying to juggle, you know, like childcare and all of these different things during this period. And I think, you know, there's an opportunity, or there will be some changes, I think, to the way to the way education works. I know there's a lot of people that are looking at this type of thing. You know, the real challenge is that, you know, changing something as large as education, you know, within the huge system of government, is not an easy task, you know, because it's also interwoven with everything else. I think with people like yourself and some of the work that we're doing and other people that I've been speaking to, if we can each, you know, kind of demonstrate that, you know, something different does work and something different can still produce results, then, you know, we'll get to a tipping point eventually that requires, you know, quite systemic quite change. So that's kind of like the hope, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, when you kind of think about the type of teaching that that you engage with and you propose, there's been a lot of research done around quite different learning styles, and you know, perhaps, you know, now more than ever there seems to be a shift or a realization, or, you know, perhaps people are finally, you know, waking up, I don't know what it is, but towards the fact that actually one of the best learning kind of modalities is that of experiential, which you kind of like talked about a little bit, you know, with the example of the, you know, if it's raining, let them go out, they'll get wet, and you know, they won't want to do that again. And if they do want to do it again, then that's their choice. But, you know, I think experiential learning is far more powerful, and there's evidence to suggest that actually kind of memory retention and retention of kind of lessons is actually so much higher when you start to move into, you know, if we change the word experiential to active, from passive learning to active learning, that retention rate is kind of like 80-90%, as opposed to, you know, kind of 10% when it's just auditory. Yeah, which yeah. is the way the traditional education system is primarily set up. It's class, teacher at the front of the classroom teaching a group of children verbally, and it's, yeah, I talk, you listen, you take notes, and you regurgitate.
Yes.
You know, there's very little, you know, kind of retention at that level. But as we move kind of closer and closer through kind of, you know, visual and then kinesthetic learning, you get to this point where, you know, there's such a bias towards the active element of the learning process that retention is far higher. And this is, I guess, you know, one of the reasons why things like you know, apprenticeships have always worked so well in the past, you know, because you young people are actually learning a skill, you know, on the job, you know, so they're learning something, they're doing it, and, you know, in that situation they're getting paid for it.
Yes.
What have you had examples of, you know, where that type of learning has worked specifically well?
Well, My main sort of example is with my youngest son. He's home educated. His passion was computers. Mm-hmm. He can build a computer, he can build a network and so on. And of course, because he's done it all himself, he can remember mm-hmm. that. And, you know, I see it a lot with the last school I just worked at. You know, we had a lot more, I'm a computer teacher. My two passions are computer and nature, and they're both at different ends of the spectrum. Yeah. If I could compute in nature, that would be wonderful. But, you know, it's just with the young people at school, they had a vast knowledge and they love being able to tell you what they've done and show you what they've done. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like them becoming the teacher, them showing you. And if they can do that, if they can show someone else what they've been doing or what they've learned and so on, then you know that they've taken it in.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can look at various things on a video and so on, but it's getting into it. So it's backing up all, as you say, kinesthetic, auditory, and so on. It's backing up. It's having a holistic, if you can call all those senses holistic, a holistic way of the child accessing the learning. And I don't really like to be called a teacher. I like to be called an empowerment guide. Mm-hmm. And I see myself as a guide on the side, not a sage on the stage.
Yeah.
And that's the way, you know, we can change it so we can incorporate all different types of learning.
Yeah. Do you feel as well that, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, this idea that, you know, everyone needs to be responsible. Our own views are that, you know, children need, you know, like the traditional education system gives them the teacher-led learning. That piece is fine. But what I think and they also get obviously the parental support, or in most cases they get parental support. But I think the pieces that are missing from, you know, from my perspective, and if we look at business, yeah, there's two pieces that are missing. The first one is peer teaching, yeah, and kids learn a lot from each other. And like you said, if they've learned something, they naturally want to be able to share it.
Yes.
And then they become a teacher themselves as well. So although they don't have the label of teacher, just the very act of sharing it with a friend or with a peer, you know, they become a teacher and they become more confident in what it is they've learned and their abilities. And the other child is far more likely to listen and take note and ask questions of, you know, their friend or their peer who's explaining this to them than they are a teacher. And then the other side that I think is missing, and this is taken perhaps more from business, is mentorship. I think there's a lack of good role models. You know, yes. Many kids don't see teachers as role models, I think, yeah, that kind of like, you know, elder approach is important. You know, kids need to have a variety of different kind of exposure to different viewpoints, to different depths and different levels of knowledge about the same topics.
Yes.
Would you agree with that? Do you think that's those pieces are important?
I see that if education or learning was topic based, basically, if you're out in industry, say for example, you're in the music industry, you're going to be doing everything around music. You're mm-hmm. going to be bringing in your writing and your maths and everything around that. And that's the way I see things going, that there will be topics that a child can, like, they may have, like, for example, my son's passion was computing, but, you know, our whole family's passion is computing, so they didn't have much of a choice. But I can build that in. I can sort of say, okay, you want to build a computer, I want you to go do me a spreadsheet, work out what components you need, what prices they are, what supplier we can get them for at that price, find the best supplier and so on. So you can build a whole different learning experiences into just one topic that they're interested in doing. So they've got to do the writing and type up the proposal and use their brain and, you know, use their grammar and so on, because they want to achieve this end result.
Yeah.
And really, that's what we do as adults. I see that these alternative ways of learning is just a reflection of what's done in industry for adults. And, you know, one of my passions is to get these young people to create portfolios of their skills, you know, if it's, you know, either a presentation or a website or whatever, to show their skills so they can take this and show either
employers,
future colleges or universities, and they've got their skills where, and, you know, qualifications as they are now won't be so relevant.
I think that's interesting what you said, because that kind of leads back to kind of what we're trying to do, which is, you know, by helping children identify what their unique genius is and what their passion is, you can then, rather than having them focus on improving all of the things that they're not good at, you know, you can structure the learning, you can structure that whole learning experience, that whole learning journey around, you know, something that they are motivated by. And if they're motivated by it because they want to, you know, it's part of who they are, then they're going to be far more engaged with it all the way through. In my view is, if we can connect kids with that unique genius and allow it to develop and support its development by giving them access then to, you know, to kind of different tools, different skills, different experiences, different mentors to help them develop that, then actually they're going to be far more engaged. They're going to be far more positive. And their experience of kind of learning is going to be far greater. They're going to come out the other end with something that they're passionate about, which they know they can follow through. And that's kind of where I would like to see, you know, parenting and education go, is that actually we become far more supportive of the child's identity, and of the child's desire. And I'm not disputing at all, the fact that kids need to learn to read and write, and they need to learn about science and biology. All of those things are important, of course. But I do think that right now, those things are taught at the expense of a child's dream, a child's passion, a child's kind of identity. And if we can find a way to either to balance those two by supporting or supplementing their education with additional learning, or eventually we can start to shift the curriculum so that it is more balanced, then I think we'll be in a far better place.
I think we need to sort of have everyday maths and English. How often do you go into Tesco's and do a quadratic equation or do algebra on your baked beans? There's incidental learning. And, incidentally, because the child is interested in something, they might see a magazine, so they'll start reading it. And it's been shown that even children that haven't had been formally taught to read, they just have the innate need to read. And eventually they will catch up with their peers because they're doing it through their own passion.
That makes
sense. Their own genius, as you say, as to use your term.
It makes a lot of sense. So I've had a couple of conversations this week, one with a head teacher in California, who she wrote a book called Design Thinking, which is all about helping teachers understand the different components to allow kids to grow and to grow into their own genius. And she's now the head teacher. She helped design the school. She's now taken over as the head teacher of the school. And it's an innovation school. So essentially it is very much more community-based. It's very much more permission-based, consent-based, much like you were talking about. and it's an alternative, school. It's growing in popularity. And they're seeing some great results from it. So that conversation with her was kind of really encouraging. And then I had another conversation with a friend in Guernsey, who has spent the last 6 years trying to transform the kind of systems of the island, from governmental systems to education systems to transport systems. He spent the last 6 years kind of working on that process. And he was telling me that they've actually now got growth mindset onto the curriculum within schools. So instead of it being this idea that we, and again, studies that have been done by Carol Dweck, a Stanford professor, talk a lot about about this idea of kind of fixed mindset and growth mindset, and how many kids have intelligence, from an exam perspective. But they're so focused, it's kind of parents reward them for getting good results. And so they strive to get good results. Then when they don't get a good result, they don't know how to cope with that. And they don't know how to deal with that. And quite often it's those children who are more intelligent, who have a fixed mindset. Whereas those children who are encouraged a little bit more, and she refers to a school where they don't have a fail grade. It's almost a not yet.
Yes.
But rather than saying fail, it's like you're not ready quite yet. Or they ask the question, how could you do that differently? Or you're almost there, but it's not quite right. It kind of just those changes in language.
Yeah.
You kind of, they're not discouraging. They're just saying, hey, look, perhaps there's a different way of doing this. And that kind of expands the child, and it allows them just to think, oh, okay, so I can think about how to do this in any way I want, rather than in this specific, very prescribed way. That is going to get me a result, but I only know how to solve it if this parameter is here and this parameter is here. I can solve the problem within that, but if those two parameters aren't there, I've got no idea where to start.
Exactly. I think now a lot of children are afraid to try because they're afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And in industry, there's this agile mindset is coming along, basically, that to thinking outside the box and be able to try this and see if it worked. If it didn't work, well, what else could we do? Let's try this instead. Or, well, that worked. Let's perhaps add this onto it. So, the way industry is going to be changing as well. Mm-hmm. We need to have those agile mindsets children there. And I've actually got a link with a recruitment agency who purely deals with the agile industries, and he wants agile children, the children who can think outside the box, can take the risks, can analyze their failure. I say there is no failure.
Yeah.
It's a learning experience.
Yeah.
You don't get things wrong. It's just a pointer to show you where you just need to do a little bit more research. And one of my students was very enlightened by that. He was like, oh no, don't want to try it. He says, oh sorry, I got that wrong. He says, no, you didn't get it wrong. That just shows us there's there's the capacity to learn a bit more in that
area. Yeah, there's always another way of doing things. All you do is you learn X number of ways to do things wrong. to do things a different way, a way that doesn't deliver the result that you wanted it.
They say learn by your mistakes, and that's really why I'm brilliant.
excellent. That's been really insightful. What I'd love you to do, if you can, is just kind of perhaps share. Yeah, a piece of advice for any child that might be listening, that will perhaps help them and give them some confidence to do things a little bit differently, and a piece of advice for any parents that are listening and that are wondering how they can how they can provide the best for their children.
Okay, I think for the child. I think I just really said it, that Nothing is wrong. It's just a learning experience. Mm-hmm. And I think for the parent that you need to trust, firstly, yourselves and trust your child, that your child will lead you on a path of learning that is suitable for them and that engages their passion and brings out their genius.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. I've loved kind of hearing a little bit more about your family, but also kind of the types of teaching that you've been doing with children. I look forward to kind of seeing how your endeavours kind of progress over time. So thank you so much for joining us there.
That's lovely. Thank you, Peter. And if you want to find out anything more about what I'm doing, then please pop on to shebearconnection.com. Perfect, on the internet.
Yeah. And we'll put a link under this as well so people can see it.
Or Google me. Yeah. I'm everywhere.
Perfect. Good stuff. All right. Thanks a lot, Sarah. Thank you very much, Peter. Okay.
We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.